Hi, and welcome to Songdivers, an interview podcast about singer-songwriters.
We like to go deep in conversation with our favorite musicians in search of honest answers.
What are the ingredients of a great song?
What makes a songwriter tick?
Can a musician make a living these days?
Is Jason Isbell overrated?
What?
My name's Stefan.
And this is Ed.
Get ready to meet a young songwriter with the poise of an artist twice his age.
Hi, I'm Liam Bowman.
There goes my life, walking out of sight.
Our last episode was with songwriter Brian Sutherland, a Nashville-based musician and standout at the 2019 Downtown St. Petersburg Songwriters Festival. The first night of the fest, Brian, a veteran of these events in his early 30s, shared the stage with Liam Bowman, a young songwriter in his early 20s who by contrast appeared ever the rookie. Any reticence that may have been visible was extinguished when Liam hit his first notes with the steady strum of a guy who's been doing this for years. And he has. He's got a few tours under his belt, and his EP is still warm from a late 2019 release. Liam's been on our wish list ever since we saw him busking with a vintage Gibson guitar at Cage Fest here in Florida last year.
All those good times turn to
in person, Liam is polite and reserved, with lady killer blue eyes that probably net him a few extra tips when he's working as a barista in his downtime. Liam has an innocent smile that's almost misleading, because his sense of humor gives way to a maturity and depth of a guy that has a lot to say and is really good at using his pen and his guitar to say it. Liam's EP is really good, and it's a very enjoyable listen. And the unreleased song he played for us during this episode has been stuck in my head for weeks, which has been a very pleasant experience. This episode was a lot of fun, and we hope you will join us in becoming big fans of Liam Bowman. Liam, where are you from, buddy?
I'm from Bradenton, Florida.
Sunny, beautiful Bradenton.
Yep.
We have a fairly high count of Bradenton.
I was just going to say.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Chris James and Brian Sutherland. And It's a very fertile, like, music town. Mm-hmm. It's kind of Music City, Florida, like...
Bradenton, yeah.
No, literally,
it's like
no
the Nashville of Florida.
No one's ever described it that way. Never. I don't think they ever will.
Yeah.
Give it 20 years.
Yeah. Liam, tell us a little bit about your upbringing. Tell us, you know, big family, small family,
small,
musical family.
I mean, small immediate family, I guess. I have one sister. My parents were divorced since, like, I was one, really. So I kind of grew up bouncing around, like, back and forth from Bradenton to St. Pete, where my dad lived. And my parents are just huge music lovers, so I guess that's where that came from at, like, a young age. Like, I was just, like, you put on a sad song in the car and I would start crying, basically, at, like, 1 year old.
So I've heard that that's a thing. Some really good friends of mine, their son's, I guess he's almost three, or he's just over three, and he loves, like, really sad songs. And he knows it upsets him, but he likes it.
I'm that way. I mean, we were joking because Liam and I...
Yeah, but you're an adult.
I was the same way when I was a kid.
Oh.
I loved, you know, I was a huge Beatles fan. Mm-hmm. And, like, my favorite songs were, like, Yesterday and Eleanor Rigby and, you know, the downbeat, like, kind of...
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, well, that's pretty fascinating. I thought maybe that was a strange thing, but maybe that's a little bit more common.
Yeah, I'm not sure. But
I've been reading Jeff Tweedy's... book.
Oh, so have I.
Let's go so we can get back.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's really good.
I have a copy still, just yet to dive into it.
You should read it, but there's a little passage where he talks about how much he loves sad songs. That's his favorite thing, is to really feel that raw emotional pull, you know? Like, so you're not alone. You're in good company.
Cool. Good to know.
So your parents, I'm assuming, were the ones toggling all the music around you. Was there any specific genres or styles you were hearing a lot? You probably don't remember when you were one, but as you started to get a little older.
I mean, Tom Petty was, like, constantly on in my mom's car. Like, Full Moon Fever is, like, the soundtrack to my childhood, I feel like. Mm-hmm. And then stuff like Bruce Springsteen, my dad loved like folkier stuff like Bob Dylan. He got me into like some newer folk bands like the Decemberists and all that kind of stuff later on. My mom loved like classic rock stuff, I guess. She liked like Aerosmith and like Kiss and all that kind of stuff. So
I understand.
I grew up listening to that kind of stuff. Yeah.
And so were you just kind of splitting time every weekend back and forth?
For the most part, yeah. I mean, here and there, like things come up, but yeah, for the most part, it was like every other weekend I was in a different place.
Were either your parents musical? Did they play instruments?
Yeah, my dad's, he plays guitar, and he's been playing since he was like 13. So I guess that's really where I learned the most from. Like I took band class in like sixth grade and I started playing bass, but then in seventh grade, I was like, I want to play the guitar. So he was like, here's like three chords. And then I kind of just took off from there. But my mom, she played clarinet like in high school, but that was about it.
You didn't gravitate towards the clarinet?
I didn't, surprisingly, you know, there just wasn't enough of them around, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I think there was a lot of kids in my high school that were like, I really want to meet more girls. I think I'm going to play the clarinet. Other than a very sad and emotional kid, apparently. What kind of kid were you? Were you, athletic? Were you into sports? Were you troublemaker?
Up until 10, I wasn't a troublemaker really. I tried to be athletic, but I just failed miserably. Like my sister played soccer, so I was like, I want to play soccer. And then I would just kind of like dance around in the field. And then I played like Little League baseball for, geez, like 6 years. And I hated it all the way through. I was right field every season. I was just like, I'm just going to keep going. I don't know why.
Offense to the other right fielders out there.
Right.
But I understand.
Yeah. So I tried to be athletic. Wasn't really ever. But I was always like kind of a weird kid. Like loud. A weird, loud, annoying kid, if that makes sense.
Weird, loud, annoying, huh?
Yeah. Just like, just unashamedly myself, I guess, like as most kids are.
So that's interesting because I've seen you play a couple times. Mm-hmm. We've communicated, and I would not have pegged you as a loud person or mm-hmm. kid. And you know, I don't call you a kid. You're still fairly young and figuring life out. But you know, especially your songwriting style and stuff. So that's interesting. Did you metamorphosize at some point?
I mean, yeah, but not completely, I guess. It depends on the setting. If I'm with the right people, I can still get loud, I guess.
Got it. In terms of musical voice, right? Mm-hmm. One of the questions we always get into is, you know, when did you start to maybe recognize or want to have an artistic voice? And talk to us a little bit about, you know, when maybe that was happening for you.
Kind of right away when I started playing guitar. Like I wrote a song, I think within 4 months or so. Mm-hmm. And it was called Forever. It was horrible. It was about me being with this girl that I liked forever, you know?
Do you still know it?
Probably know the chorus.
Can you do it for us?
I could do it.
Yeah, Liam.
Oh, we want to hear your first song. This.
But you have to tell us her full name and address first.
Oh, to be honest, I don't remember her last
name. I just want to say the irony that you can't remember her name and that the song's called Forever. That's beautiful.
Oh, you. And I would wait forever and ever for you to notice I'm the only one you've needed in your life. For once, you know, you got to sneak a little bit of angst in there end, like, because you never do.
That's nice, Liam.
Thanks. Yeah, that's my best work so far. I've just been trying to chase that
all
high.
Downhill from there.
Right? So how old were you when you wrote that?
12 years old.
And how old are you now?
I'm 21.
Okay. Yeah, so halfway through life, basically.
Right. Yeah, hopefully. Mm-hmm. Hopefully more.
Yeah, well, I mean, to this point. Year to date. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Life to date. Yeah. And so you wrote that tune. Did you play it for her?
No, definitely not.
No, why not?
No. Oh, man. I was always like a very awkward, nervous person as well. So
Awkward, like, nervous, and
I feel
loud.
Like you also, yeah.
That's quite a combo.
Yeah, it's hard to describe, I guess.
Could you even walk up and talk to this girl? Like, did you?
Not really. Yeah. Not really. I would ask her like a question about like the math homework, and I'd be like, okay, that's awesome. We're getting somewhere.
Yeah.
You know?
You're sweating and...
Right.
Oh, so this wasn't a real relationship?
Oh, definitely not.
Oh.
Definitely it was a dream
not. I wrote so many love songs for people that like didn't even know I existed.
Yeah, I think that's prerequisite to being a good songwriter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, fantasizing about the person you've coveted.
Mm-hmm.
Kirk Adams, one of the guys we had on here, wrote a love song to Jane Wedlin from the Go-Go's.
Oh, and it was awesome. Like, yeah, I think he was like 12 too when he wrote
I think
that.
I listened to that episode.
Yeah. Oh, it's a great, awesome. It was one of my favorite things he's done. Yeah, we're going to actually cover that one.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
So you play this first tune, you write this first tune. Talk to us a little bit about what happens next. So are you in a band? Are you performing out? Like, when do you start to get the bug to do something?
Yeah,
with
well, I had a friend across the street, and he kind of played like a little bit of drums, but he didn't have a drum kit, so we just got some like pots and pans, and we would just like jam every day, and we would like write a bunch of songs, or I would write songs that would come like, play something to this, and he would. So we had like a little band for a while, but we never really played out. Like, we had... You ever done any of those like sponsored showcases that they'll be like, sell all these tickets and like bring your entire family out? And it's kind of just like a scam. So we did like
pyramid scheme,
like four of those or so. But we never really played out. We kind of just would stay inside and jam like all the time. We wanted to, just didn't know how to, I guess, how to like get out there.
This is an interesting topic, and especially because you're still so close to it. So what age were you doing that?
From like 12 to 16, 17, maybe.
So you're doing the showcasing and stuff. Are you guys out playing bars? Are you doing like doing covers, or is it all original stuff?
Mostly just originals. We're kind of lazy in that way. We're like, original stuff came so easy for us. And then it would be like, oh, let's play a cover. And it would be like, oh, man, this doesn't sound as good as the original, so let's just not play it. Which I kind of took on to myself as well later on. So I don't do too many cover gigs for that reason, because I have like such a small roster of songs that I can go through. But yeah, so mostly just original stuff. We weren't really playing bars or anything. We did like, I don't know, some shows around like St. Pete and Tampa once in a while, but it'd be like, you know, a couple times a year we'd play out, really.
Okay. And while this is going on, are you getting really heavily into your own listening catalog? Are there bands that you're just like falling in love with?
Oh, yeah. I mean, not good ones, but definitely. When I was like 12, 13, I got like heavy into like emo music.
Yeah, naturally.
So like bands like My Chemical Romance, like Fall Out Boy, Blink-182 were like just on all the time for me. Mm-hmm. And like a lot of the stuff I was writing was kind of trying to pull from that a little bit. But never like... Never full on emo. I can never get it just right, and I disliked that about my music. I wanted to be more angsty and more emotional, I guess.
And now, what do you listen to?
I listen to a lot of like alternative indie, like folk stuff. Like I love like Phoebe Bridgers, Connor Oberst kind of stuff. Like Julian Baker, I've been super into that kind of scene lately. But in the last few years, I got really into like some weirder stuff. Like I got really into Radiohead, and man, just
experimental sad bastard.
I guess so.
Now, when I'm hearing your stuff, especially your most recent EP, and people will hear your songs and obviously go listen to you, but I hear a lot of like Jimmy Eat World, mixed with like Pedro the Lion.
I don't know Pedro the Lion.
Ed, you know Pedro the Lion, don't you?
A little bit, not really.
So your stuff is very, I think deconstructed is probably the right word I would use. And that it's not lacking detail, and it's not minimalist, but it's polished, but it's not overproduced. And so Pedro the Lion, somebody, it was like this really cool, very laid back, casual lyrically, but really smart writing. And a lot of like syncopated, staccato-y kind of stuff. Not like jazz, but just a little bit more so than, you know, like a Jack Johnson-y acoustic you know, bass and drums. But your voice, I hear a lot of Jimmy Eat World in your voice and kind of approach to the songs. But there's more, I also don't hear that genre, though, in what you're doing.
Gotcha.
It feels very relevant and current.
Mm-hmm. There was one Jimmy Eat World record that I like listened to consistently. I think it was Bleed American, the one with all the trophies on it.
They're all great records. Mm-hmm. Even their new stuff's really good.
Yeah. But I definitely pull a lot from that genre. Yeah, I guess like also my mom growing up listened to a lot of like the mainstream, like adult contemporary rock. So there's a lot of that, like, not to call it like butt rock, but like,
did you say butt rock?
Butt rock, yeah. You know, like,
what's butt rock?
What is butt rock?
You don't know butt rock? It's like when you're on a radio station, it's like nothing but rock.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, so as much as I try to avoid writing like that, there's definitely like a lot of that influence like rooted inside me that I can't really let go of. So like I can compare
it's rock
to, like,
and roll, man. It gets you.
Right?
Gets you to your core.
Mm-hmm.
I might be way off base because when I hear your stuff, I think of more like Elliott Smith and you know, Nick Drake and that
kind. Yeah,
mm-hmm. Maybe because I've heard more of your acoustic-y, you know,
yeah,
like
for
solo,
sure,
stuff, you know. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, I think there's a lot of people, and sophomore's not the right word. There's a lot of people that maybe write a few songs, they go and they put a record out that's acoustic, bass, and drums, and it's just like, okay, cool, that's your entry into it. Like, we were all there, right?
Yeah.
I don't hear that in your stuff. You have acoustic, bass, and drums, but you're also, there's some really tasteful, very subdued lead parts that are in there. Mm-hmm. You're doing a lot of really cool color stuff with guitar and a few other effects.
You're doing all the guitar parts?
Yeah, actually on that record, I played everything. Mm-hmm. So, like, the drums and the bass, all the guitars I did. And that, like, I mean, that's just from playing for so long. Like, I'm like a super big gear nerd, I guess.
But you say you've been playing for so long. You've been playing
for so long.
Less than
10
years.
Right.
And the reason I bring that up is because I do hear someone who's playing with the ear of somebody who's, it's a mature listening ear that's letting you churn out some of those parts that, again, are really, they're not in your face, but they're these really nice foundational elements on the EP that I really appreciate when I'm listening
to.
Did you have access to
like a drum kit? Like,
yeah, they have a kit at, oh, you mean just all the time or in the studio?
Yeah.
Not much. The friend I played with was always like, don't touch my drum kit. Like, he was kind of like a stepbrother's guy.
So you guys are like really, really close.
Yeah, we were that close. But I would go to like Sam Ash or Guitar Center and I would just be there for like 2 hours on the electronic kits.
Yeah.
Until they would be like, you got to get out of here, man. You can't keep doing this.
Keep staring at all our women, but you won't talk to them. Right? Like, just get out of here, man.
Keep writing all these songs.
It's loud, yeah. So let's back up a little bit. The first time I saw you perform was at Cage Fest in 2019. Which was put on by Mark Etherington, who is Mountain Hauler and formerly Red Feather and awesome dude who we'll definitely have on the show. He'd put on this festival at Cage Brewing here in St. Petersburg, Florida. And you were on like this busking stage with Deb Ruby, I think.
Yeah.
Which was awesome. You were playing an old Gibson. Mm-hmm. What year is that?
It's a 61. That's my dad's. It's a 61 ES-120.
It's super cool.
Yeah.
Old beat up tobacco sunburst.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Really, really cool. And you guys were just doing this really cool feel that was, I think even just having the plug-in element added a little more than just two acoustics up there. But
right.
Scott Anderson from Have Gun Will Travel was like, man, you got to check out Liam. Like, this dude's really cool. And then him and Taylor Rayner and is it Leon Macton?
Meissen.
Yeah, excuse me. So that you guys sort of have this thing going where you guys are all playing on each other's stuff. You guys are all out sort of doing these road and like house concert gigs together. It's a really cool thing that you guys are doing. Talk to us a little bit about how you met those guys, who they are, and a little bit about what you guys have going on.
For sure. So I was working at Black Crow Coffee, which is owned by my family.
Is it
cool.
Really?
Yeah.
I love Black Crow. That's my favorite.
Oh, that's
shop.
Awesome.
Yeah.
For our national listeners, there's a lot of really cool coffee shops in St. Pete. Two of the best known are the two Black Crow locations that are here that
Thank
apparently
you.
Liam's family owns. Mm.
But they'll appreciate the promo.
They're very they're very Leaky Cauldron-esque when you go in there.
They wanted that kind of like rough around the edges vibe, I think, for the interior.
I would say eclectic.
That's why I think I like them, because I gravitate more to that. It reminds me like of a college town coffee shop, you know, that kind of feel.
Yeah, for sure.
I like it.
Very artistic grizz in there.
Yeah, definitely. But so I was working there and Leon came in. He was playing there that night and he had Taylor on violin. And so to give a backstory for me and Leon, there's been
Taylor on violin,
Taylor Rayner. Yeah.
Okay. Cause Taylor Reed that we just played with,
right.
She's really good on violin.
For sure.
Okay. Sorry.
We'll get to that.
So my family's first coffee shop is called Indian Shores, and it's the way out on the beach.
Yeah.
And they have an open mic. Well, they had one every week. Now it's like about once a month, but Leon started going there at a young age, like as did I, and we started playing like every week at that open mic. And I was really bad because, you know, I was young and I was like, I just want to play for people. And I was horrible. And he was like super good for his age. So I was like, I hate that guy. He's always here. He's the other kid and he's so good. So for like years, we just like, we weren't friends. We talked to each other, but
contemporaries.
Yeah. And then one day he just came in and he was like, hey, I need like a bass player. Would you be into playing bass? And I was like, yeah, for sure. So then I started playing with them.
Yeah, I hate you. What?
Yeah.
That sounds cool, yeah.
I guess at the time, the hatred had worn off. It was more of like a younger thing. Like, I was just like jealous of how good he was. He was doing like Bruno Mars covers, like spot on. And I was like, man, that kid's so good. Look at all, like, you know, look at all the girls around him. Yeah. I'm over here.
That is an indicator of,
right?
Yes.
That is of talent.
It you is.
Know, the amount of girls. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I started playing with them. And then at the time, I was still kind of in that little band I was with, but like we weren't really playing much. So I was kind of trying to figure out where I wanted to go with music.
This is the Pots and Pans band?
Yes. Okay. Yes. I guess like, so I went on tour with them and we played a little while. And that kind of opened me up, like watching Taylor and watching Leon opened me up to the idea of just going at it solo and like taking the songs I had and just making them myself. It just felt simpler and it felt right. And I felt more in control of everything that was going on. So from there, I just started playing like a few gigs here and there. Like I would open for them once in a while. And then just kind of jumped onto some bills around town. And then here I am now.
Yeah.
And Bob's your uncle.
Do you feel like we've had this conversation with other guests, and it's something that I believe that once you're in front of other people, a switch goes off. It becomes real. That's kind of like your feet are to the fire.
Mm.
You kind of have to like step, you have to up your game.
Do you mean just for performing in general?
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah. But it also goes, I don't know, it can be the opposite too. Like sometimes it depends if I'm confident with what I'm playing.
Mm-hmm.
Because if it's something that I'm not for sure on, like not 100%, like then I'll kind of pull back instead. But like, right. If it's something I've played a bunch of times, like I'll give it my all if there's like one person watching, really.
Mm-hmm. So what was the impetus to do some open mic nights? Cause I'm hearing you like, you like music, you're playing some stuff. You guys have done a couple of these showcases.
Mm-hmm.
What was driving that want to perform?
So actually there was like a specific moment that I realized like, I want to start playing out because, so we had this open mic at Indian Shores and my dad would play. And at the time my sister started playing and she would like play some covers. And, there was someone there that was like, oh, your dad and your sister, they're so good. So do you do anything or do you just not care? And then I was like, oh, okay. So I guess I'll start playing. And then it wasn't all like full of rage. It was just like, wow, that's really cool. I'd like to try that. But I remember that specific thing. I was like, okay, I can try it.
Yeah, a little
see how
nudge.
It goes. Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of frustrating to hear you say all this because you're just kind of naturally talented. It doesn't sound like you've like gone like, oh, I studied Dylan like mm-hmm. diligently. I've done like 30,000 hours of playing. You're just kind of naturally good. So could,
well,
you should just leave. Just leave.
All right. Yeah. It's been good.
It's been good. But I mean that because a lot of the, and you've got a lot of them already, right? You did some of the showcases. You're doing the open mic nights, which is a rite of passage for any musician that mm-hmm. wants to be out, right? Not just for you to cut your teeth, but like hear other people and you start to sample what other people are doing and you take the good that you learn and you mm-hmm. see what people are doing that people react really poorly to. And hopefully you notice that and you don't do that. But
definitely,
there's also that like playing cover gigs and just grinding it out. And it seems like you've been able to sort of skip that a little bit, for mm-hmm. lack of a better term. And you've got this really cool little collective community between, you know, like I said, but you and Taylor, and definitely talk about Taylor a little bit too. And we can give a little intro to him as well. But I think that's a really cool thing that you guys have cultivated that's allowing you guys to play out. You guys are on the road together. Mm-hmm. I see a lot. Tell us a little bit about what you guys are doing, in terms of, getting out on the road, being seen, what that strategy is.
For sure. So for the first tour that we went on, which is my first tour and Leon's first tour, Taylor had like gone out with a few people before.
Well, let me just pause you. So Taylor Rayner, Taylor Rayner's also a local musician here in St. Pete. Mm-hmm. I should say a national artist, but he's based here in St. Pete. But for anybody that's heard of So Far Sounds, So Far Sounds is this, we'll call it online community that it does these basically surprise shows, mm-hmm. That are based all over the country, all over the world, actually.
Yeah, they're international. London, actually.
And they kind of tout that they've had some big time performers like Leon Bridges and Mumford, mm-hmm. and people routinely will do it. But there's a lot of really cool artists that do So Far shows, and they show up everywhere. Taylor does a lot of those, but he's also the area rep for So Far Sounds,
yeah.
which is a really cool thing. So he's getting to see and cultivate and support a lot of really great music, which I think is a really cool thing. So definitely go check him out. And he's also a multi-instrumentalist.
Mm-hmm.
So between him, Leon, and you guys are out on the road.
Yeah. So we went out on that first run, and it was just... I think it was like just about 2 weeks. We were playing maybe every other night, and it was strictly just Leon stuff. So we were just kind of his backing band on that run. And then on the next run, it had been maybe a year since then. And I was kind of focusing primarily on solo stuff as well as Taylor was. So we tried to kind of like split it up. So it'd be like shows where we were all playing or like shows where like just one of us was playing. So it was cool. Like, it's like you kind of all go out on the road. You're kind of doing different things at the same time with each other.
And who's booking the shows?
Like the first couple of runs, Taylor was doing most of the booking just because he'd had experience in that before. But since then, we all kind of have taken that weight on a little bit and just kind of hit it all together just to be a little more effective. We were hitting places like DIY venues and like house shows and like coffee shops and bars and anything we can get really. Like, we'd even do like a couple cover gigs halfway through just to like get a little bit of money so we're not coming back broke.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, anywhere we can get really.
How are you finding venues? Is it places you've been through? Is it, you know, are you just picking a phone book basically or digital phone book and scrolling?
Well, like we'll reach out to people in certain areas that we know. We've hit like bands in town a little bit and just kind of like looked where people are playing.
Mm-hmm.
And then a lot of it's just kind of Google it. Like we would just look it up, like small venues in, you know, like Birmingham, Alabama, small venues in Atlanta, Georgia. Mm-hmm. And we kind of just email whoever runs the book in there.
And how are you picking when you're going to go out on the road? Is there any rhyme or reason or strategy to time of year or how long you're on for?
Not as far as like advantage for getting people out or anything. It's more just working around our personal schedules. Like I'm in school, Taylor's in school, Leon's in school. So just whenever we can, really, is when we go out.
That was going to be one of my questions too. So is music your primary meal ticket right now?
No, I work at Indian Shores Coffee out here on the beach.
You know the owners.
I do. I know. Yeah. I have an inn.
Yeah.
So I work there like 2-3 days a week. But I guess like a quarter of my income would probably be music.
Well, you don't have to go through your books.
I don't do too many cover gigs, so you know, original gigs aren't paying.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, part of the reason I asked that is because you guys, you know, there's articles routine that I actually think it's either Bands in Town or maybe, you know, anybody that's on like Gig Salad or any of those. I know they all have different, you know, little content strategies, and they put out these little like bite-sized snackable articles. And one of them is like best gigs for musicians, or, you know, like best daytime gigs for musicians. Mm. And it's basically like it's service jobs. It's anything that you can like get out of on short notice. So you can be gone for a while, you know, go out on tour and not have to like check in. So, you know, all these different like hourly things that also allow tattoos and, you know,
cool.
You know, all the things that are, you know, conducive to being an angsty songwriter.
Right.
So it's interesting, especially somebody who's in their early 20s, mm-hmm. Trying to figure that stuff out. We talked a little bit about what you're doing, how you're getting out on the tour and stuff. You just put out an EP, mm-hmm. what, at the very end of last year?
Yeah, it was just the end of October in 2019.
We saw you at a couple places, and then you sent that to us to check out. And I was like, yes, we definitely have to have this guy on. I really mm-hmm. like this EP a lot. And then you performed at the first annual downtown St. Petersburg Singer-Songwriters
right.
Festival.
Yeah.
Which is really cool. So we got to see you perform there a few times.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little bit about the tunes on there, and then let's hear some of them.
For sure. So like, it's kind of a weird project for me just because it's kind of a compilation of songs in like the last 3-4 years, considering it's my first project that I put out. So it's a bit inconsistent in that way, just because like I've kind of bounced around through like sound wise. Like some songs were written like 3 years ago, some songs were written like a month before the recording process. But I think we got it to kind of flow pretty nicely. But that was kind of the reason for the title. I called it Passing Through, just because it was like each song was passing through like a different stage in my life at the time.
So how did you choose the, you know, what was the thinking in choosing the songs? Like, were some of the older songs like just tried and true, and you knew these are keepers? And
definitely.
I have to like chronicle these, like mm-hmm. get them down.
Yeah, definitely that. And then some of them just felt like they would fit in there well. Or just, yeah, most of them were just ones I really liked and I was dying to put out. Mm-hmm. So
the EP has what, 5 songs on it?
Yeah, 5 songs.
And what is your catalog of originals currently? Like, how many are you playing out?
Maybe like 20, 25, oh, probably.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, so that's a thing to narrow that down to 5 mm-hmm. keepers that sort of feel
but,
like
I mean, a good handful of those have been written since the recording process. Oh, wow. So at the time, I probably chose like from a group of 10 or so.
Let's hear one from the EP.
For like, sure.
What are you going to play for us?
I'll do Circles first.
Circles. Okay.
Yeah.
And what tuning is this?
This is an open D, which I'm not currently in. Just well prepared here.
Different light, different priorities. You're the only thing that makes me feel alive. And you're scared, and I know that it's hard to see the inside from the moon, but I'm down to wait and see. Running circles round a ring's gonna burn me. Don't fall on me, rain.
You're playing a new little geek box over there.
I am. I just bought it in Nashville on our last run, actually.
What is it? Tell us about it.
It's a Harmony. I don't know the exact model. It's a flat top. It's from 1967. But it was like redone by a Nashville luthier up there. And I got it from like this little music shop called Fanny's Music.
Cool.
It's like full of old ladies. Super nice.
East Nashville.
But I really haven't had too many acoustics of my own. Like, this is the nicest acoustic I've ever owned. I think, like, the runner-up was, like, a Baby Taylor, probably.
Those are great.
Yeah, so I've kind of, like, gone my whole life borrowing guitars from people. Mm-hmm. So it feels good to own something, I guess.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah. Guitars go in the circle of life, and that they end up back in young hands after they've been in old hands.
Right.
You know? Speaking of circles, back to your song. So you told us a little bit of before the show, but so that song's a relationship song, which, any song can be interpreted, but a little bit about, you said the honeymoon period of a relationship coming to an end.
Yeah. It's kind of just about like you find something so good. And I don't know, I'm always someone who kind of thinks ahead into the future. Like, how is this going to feel in a few months, or how's this going to feel in a year? And I was just afraid that that feeling I had just acquired was going to go away. And I think that was a mutual feeling in the relationship, which, somewhat it does. But like what you're left with is like trust and understanding later on. So that was the kind of inspiration for that song.
I really like a lot of the lyrics in that. I mean, I like all the lyrics, but there's a couple that really stood out to me. I love the line about who knew you'd be so molded to my desires and not to yours. This is a great, great line. Did that come from a realization you had, or did that sort of just come out while you were laying the lyrics down?
It kind of just came out naturally. I didn't think about it too much. That whole song, it's so weird that I play it like that, because I wrote it on like a drum machine with like crazy like delays and everything. I was like, I'm going to make this crazy ambient song. But then at the end of the day, I came back and I was like, it kind of just sounds nice. Just like one guitar, nothing else. And then like the outro didn't come for like a while. I was going to record that song in the studio, and I was like, man, this needs to be longer. There's more to be said. So I just kind of like threw together this little outro, and it ended up meaning a lot, I feel like, just with the few words I threw in there.
You mean the rain?
Yeah.
Rain falling.
Like, didn't at the time, like, I feel like it's a common thing for me, like I'll like throw something out there and I'll find the meaning for it later on.
I think that's an interesting thing where you're talking about playing on words, even just repeating something. It starts, you say it once, you say it again, and then you said it 20 times, you don't even recognize a word anymore. I think what's interesting too, that's not the only song of yours you do that in.
Yeah.
You have a couple of these outro-y kind of, you're almost like doing, like mantraing, know? The other one, I think it's on Hardly, where friends cast bitter judgment, which you repeat that too, which is really interesting, and it doesn't become repetitive. It's like almost like a development that, gains its own dynamics.
In like the last couple of months, I realized that like listening back to the EP, I was like, man, every song, it's actually every song ends with something like that, like where it's kind of just one phrase repeated. And I think usually that one phrase can kind of sum up everything else I've said. Like in circles, it's kind of just like, don't let the bad feelings fall on me, or like kind of trying, I'm wishing those that end away from me, if that makes any sense.
But yeah, I really enjoyed that. Did you play that? So Ed, you and Ed did a show with a young lady named Taylor Reed on Sunday here.
Yeah.
I felt like it was a good blend of different styles.
Yeah, I think so too.
But it was also interesting after the fact. I was thinking, I was watching you and we had a short conversation about this, and I want to ask you about it, about the alternate tunings. Because during your set, I was comparing what you do to what I do. And ordinarily, unless I'm doing Nick Drake
right,
or something like that, I don't do alternate tunings. I just stay in standard tuning, and I contort my fingers to come up with different voicings.
Liam, did you watch him play?
Like, yeah,
did you
pay attention? Looks really painful.
Let me just
actually
speak for all the other people. And I love, he's one of my favorite people in the world, but everybody that plays with Ed loves Ed. They also hate Ed because he he doesn't tune his guitar down, but he plays chords that you couldn't play unless you tune your guitar down, but he's still somehow contorting his hand to do it.
Yeah.
And they're the most complicated chord progressions in the world.
I thought it was really cool because you like do so many different alternate tunings and, you know, it really lends a certain vibe to your songs.
Yeah, for
and
sure.
We have that contrast. And then what Taylor does is interesting. She's usually in standard tuning, I think. Mm-hmm. But she uses the looping station. You know, that just brings another element to her.
Yeah.
Everything she does.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I thought it was an interesting contrast of three different ways to kind of approach.
For sure.
Being a solo guitarist, vocalist.
Yeah, you know, you have to make it interesting some way. Yeah. So
dynamics.
Yeah.
Dynamics really are so important. And you can do that with a band, right? Everybody mm-hmm. starts to add something in, and I'm very guilty, and traditional is probably not the right word, but it's routine for me to think about as I'm writing a song that way. But I think it speaks a lot to the staying power of a song that mm-hmm. it doesn't get boring, it moves correctly if you can just sit down on acoustic or piano and do it, you mm-hmm. know. But you still have to be paying attention to things like I mentioned, that the couple little flourishes that you did in there, like you're not mm-hmm. doing that the whole song. You're doing it in specific parts that mm-hmm. that catch the listener's ear and kind of reignite what you're hearing and start to add little elements in there.
Definitely.
And whether it's a loop station, whether it's really complicated chords mm-hmm. and progressions, or it's open tunings, you're accessing another vocabulary by doing that stuff, which is really important. Hey guys, this is Steph here, and I need to get something off my chest. The truth is, I have guitar playing insecurities. Pretty big ones. I mean, I can hold my own, but when I hear guys like Ed pick up a guitar, I realize quickly just how narrow my scope of knowledge truly is. My best friend, writing partner, and all-around guitar stud, Colin Ryan, confessed to me recently that he's been subscribing to True Fire to expand his musical vocabulary. I told Ed about it, and he was curious too. So we made a visit to True Fire's site and were blown away by how diverse and comprehensive True Fire's courses are. We were also really impressed by their educators, too. Well-known musicians, Grammy winners, and touring performers. A few really cool ones that stood out to me were Luther Dickinson, the North Mississippi All-Stars, Dweezil Zappa, Sonny Landreth, and our guest, Ellis Paul. Any lingering reluctance to sign up was quickly extinguished when I learned that over a million guitar players from around the world are already using True Fire. I downloaded the app and I became one of them. So if you want to join us at any skill level, head over to songdivers.com/truefire to get started on our favorite musical education platform.
So how did you get into the alternate tunings? Were you...
To be honest, I don't quite remember why I started it. I guess I became interested in playing like that.
Was somebody else doing it, or did you try to learn a song maybe at some point that was open tuning?
I know there's
maybe
a lot
it might have been that
Soundgarden or Pearl Jam or just about. You know, there's a lot of bands who use that.
Like, Skylar,
I think I started with. I think I started with Drop D, and I was like, "This is kind of cool," but I kind of wish like the entire guitar was this easy as these top two strings. So for a while, when I went in open D, I realized how easy I was able to make such like a pretty melody or like pretty chord progression. And I was kind of using it as a bit of a crutch for a little bit there. So I've kind of tried to break out of writing primarily in open D and like open tunings and sticking to standard a little bit more just to kind of keep sets a little more diverse, so everything doesn't sound the same. But like since then, I've become more interested in it, just listening to people like Sunkill Moon. I don't know if you, mm-hmm. yeah. I just fell in love with the way his guitar sounds, and he tunes down to like open C and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And then like people like Ben Howard, he'll do stuff like that as well. So just that kind of like finger style became really interesting to me.
A lot of people, you know, open tunings up to just, yes, access more. Like we had Ellis Paul in here, and he talked about why he accesses different tunings and stuff and different voicings, but I know, like, growing up when I was playing to my teenagers and stuff, you were doing open tunings, so it was just easier to play.
That's why I started.
You drop a D and just move up and down. But but you're doing a lot with those. It's not like you're just tuning down because you're selling out to,
right.
You know, you don't want to do the work. Right. There's a lot of work going on. I think too with open tunings, just depending on the tuning, that was open G. A lot of people playing slide and stuff like that. There's a different approach to playing in that tuning with voicings and the way you can slide, even not having a slide on your finger, but just working up and down the neck. There's an approach there you can't do in a standard, and so that opens up a different style of ambient. I think was one of the words you used to kind of self describe. I think is definitely a word I would use in how I'm labeling some of your stuff for sure. There's a really cool ambience to it.
Yeah, I guess I've always liked. Like big, dark, open sounds.
It does expand your sonic palette, and you get a little bit of that bass. You don't have a bass player with you, but it gives you a little more of that feel. That
for sure,
more bottom end.
So, yeah, and like especially, I was telling Ed, I'm usually more of an electric player. Like I play that old Gibson at most gigs I do, and when you're in open in that, man, you can just go forever, kind of just because it sounds so pretty and it sounds so big and like shimmery. It's nice.
Yeah, and you've got some little clips up on your Instagram and stuff once in a while that I've seen just doing different stuff on that. But there's also a lot of sonic elements to playing a guitar with that much character. And, the pickups that are in those old L models and stuff like that, it's a specific sound.
Definitely.
In addition to any tuning. Let's hear some more stuff, man.
Definitely, yeah.
Liam, what are you going to do for us?
I'm going to do a newer song. It's unreleased. It's called Hotel Hallway.
Hotel Hallway. Okay. And I think you were giving us a little heads up on this too. So this is a time on the road inspired, right?
Definitely. So I was hired on to play bass for a band, and I hadn't really met any of them. Like I kind of knew one of the members. Just we go to the same school, so we're kind of just acquaintances, I guess. So they asked if I want to play bass and go on this like 2-week run to do like South by Southwest and all that kind of stuff. So I said, yeah. And in that time, like we kind of all became really close and there was like a feeling of togetherness. And then when I came back, that feeling is gone. So here I am trying to get that feeling back. Yeah. Through music.
Fluorescent light. Hotel hallway, in this space I live till morning, until we pack the car and we find a new place to lie, and I pretend we're family. Ain't it mad that a month ago I didn't know ya? Now I headed home and getting near. Better days are. Now I'm buried in a temporary feeling, but maybe if I did myself out, that sun will still be shining. Fill me with lust and guilt, holding on to an inner lining. Now I feel bad for things I think of, 'cause you give me your all and you take my zero. And I'm not sad, I'm just feeling lonesome. But should I maybe if I did myself out, that sun will still be shining. Fill me with lust and guilt, holding on to it in a lining. Feel free to drop me when you're ready. Won't rest this weight on. Brightly colored painting, and I'm a canvas that's been washed in blue. In blue, in
Liam, for a nervous, awkward kid, you've got a very sure voice.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Can I ask you a quick question?
For sure.
Because I want to make sure I hear the lyrics right.
Mm-hmm.
But so is it if I dig myself up?
If I dig myself out.
If I dig myself out.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess I was
similar
to
dig
like
myself
a,
up. Yeah.
Like in
yeah.
a rut?
Yeah, I guess
dig
so.
Dig myself out, yeah. I like it.
Thanks.
Yeah. I love that.
I was hoping
playing when you go to that mm-hmm. It's such a good feeling.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's so long and like droney. So when you finally get a little bit of like brightness in there,
yeah.
it just feels really good.
Well, the chords are doing what you're talking about in the lyrics. Like you said, like you're getting these little bright spots of like, oh gosh, if I could just find that, and then
mm-hmm.
maybe you're in a social space or something. I'm just projecting onto you now based on
oh,
what's
no.
about. But all of a sudden it's like you get that feeling again that like,
mm-hmm.
you know, you're connecting with people and stuff, and so yeah, the sun's shining, and then you leave that spot and all of a sudden you're back into
That's
your,
what we
right.
do with a song though. We project our own meaning onto it. I
mm-hmm.
mean, you guide us with lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
But there's always, you know, if it's a good song, and that one's a good one, kind of draws your own meaning out of it. So
yeah.
It lets us in.
My favorite songs are always ones that they're not necessarily spelled out so clearly.
Right.
It's something that, like, you kind of have to grab your own meaning from.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I've always loved, like, Tom Petty's lyricism, just because it's so simple. And, like, if you look at songs, like, it's always, like... Like, I have no idea what he's talking about, to be honest, half the time. But, like, one line will say so much that, like, that's really all you need. Like, I get the entire meaning from the song just from that one thing that you say.
Well, speaking of Tom Petty, earlier we were talking, and you said one of your songs is inspired by Tom Petty.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you specifically thought of Tom Petty and thought, I'm going to write kind of a Tom Petty song. Would you mind playing that one?
For sure, yeah. Would either of you have a pick by chance? I totally had one.
We
and
do. Now yeah,
it's gone. We have picks.
This is a music podcast, after all. There's,
it is, right?
There's seven guitars in this room with you.
Thank you.
And you could tell you're struggling with the tuning. He's a tuning comfort
support
animal.
Dog.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tuning support dog.
All right. I'm just going to break down, use a tuner, you know. It's here for a reason.
That's what I had to do the other night.
Right. Fine, I'll use it.
Shit. But it was cold out there.
It was.
My guitar was not happy.
So we should mention while Liam's doing that, we talk a lot about the venues in this area, obviously because we want to pay homage and just talk about how cool this musical community here is. But for people that are coming through this area or acts that want to come and play, it's great to know about a lot of the places here. We talk about the Hideaway, Ruth Eckert Hall, if you're looking for a bigger venue, a lot of great stuff. Ed and Liam just recently played at the Independent in Tampa, in the Seminole Heights area, which is a really cool artsy area in Tampa that's kind of like, it's almost like the sister enclave to St. Pete, I would say. We have a lot of, you know, mirrored restaurants that are over there. Bodega's an awesome spot from St. Pete that's moved. It's got a spot over in Seminole Heights too. And then there's also an Independent location here in St. Pete, which is really, really fun.
Right.
Both really cool spots that absolutely should be checked out if you're coming through the area.
And they're staunch supporters of original music.
Without question.
So yeah, I love that place.
Yeah. If you're out looking for a place to see music, you can always count on the Independent for good food, good beers, and good tunes. Let's unpack that a little. So you're saying, hey, I got mine. I gave up all.
Mm.
And then you moved on in record time.
Yeah, so...
Are you switching perspectives there?
No, definitely not. It was kind of... So it was written about a friendship that kind of felt smothering. So I kind of distanced myself, and we're not really friends anymore. And that person, it's like when you think they're going to be so affected by something, but then they're totally fine. So it's
neutrality.
Like, yeah. Yeah. So, it was kind of like, I get what I deserve for just like being a shitty person and like just ending the friendship kind of thing. But
oh, so I got mine, not like I got mine. It was more like you got your comeuppance.
Yeah.
That's how I took it.
So I wrote that and I was like, man, I finally wrote a happy song just because of it, like the energy of it.
I want to produce the shit out of that song. Just like the whole band around it.
It feels that way.
It feels great.
And I tend to actually stray away from it in sets just because it's so different from all my stuff. But yeah, I wrote that and I went to play it at like a show and I was like, I finally wrote a happy song. And then I played it and everyone was like, what are you talking about? That was really sad. That's not happy. And it's like, okay. I'll try harder next time.
Well, you know, it's funny. Ed and I are big fans of like Wolf Peck and who's the guy that we were just talking about?
Theo Katzman from Wolf Peck.
Just phenomenal. So I've been binging a little bit of his stuff because he was coming through Florida.
He'll be in Jacksonville on Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
But he was talking about, you know, he's got a whole record called Heartbreak Hits.
Mm-hmm.
And he's talking about how a lot of the songs, several of them specifically, you can listen to him, you're like, oh, it's a really cool upbeat tune. And then you go for your second helping and you're like, oh, man, this is rough.
Yeah, and you're tapping your toe and then you're like, holy shit.
So there's a juxtaposition in the way the song feels and what the lyrics are actually about. And I think that one's probably a little bit like that. Mm-hmm. I want to just commend you, too. It's really hard generally when you're just starting out. I shouldn't speak for everybody, but I think it's generally accepted. It'll probably agree to this, but it's hard to not just write about love when you first start.
Yeah,
because that's what you feel and you're kind of consumed with. So kudos to you for writing a really great, meaningful, feeling tune. It's about a relationship, but it's not, you know, not a romantic one. It doesn't sound like.
Yeah, I've kind of tried to stray away from that in like the last I don't know, maybe year, less than that probably, but it's something that like I was so. I guess expected to write about, like, I just always wrote about love, and it was like I had so many songs about it, and I was just like listening to other people like Sun Kill Moon and like Phoebe Bridgers. They like go into different, like, just so many different avenues that they explore, and I just wanted to write about more than one feeling, you know, because there's so much there that doesn't get touched on. I feel like
it's reminding me of like years and years ago I wrote for a music publication that was based here.
Okay.
And there was a guy, an editor there. His favorite band was Creedence Clearwater Revival.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked him too, but we were having a conversation about it. And I was like, why is that your favorite band? And he's like, John Fogerty never written a love song. So if you go through their catalog and think about all their songs. I don't know how many of their songs you know.
I know like a good deal, probably, but now I'm like racking my brain. I can't think of one love song.
There's no love songs. They're
That's
all
so weird.
They're about an interesting range of other topics, but there's no like love song.
Which probably makes him a very interesting or extremely boring date, you know.
Just somebody that nobody loves.
He's saving it for the dates, or
maybe he's waiting to write that love song. He just hasn't had the opportunity.
So is that one's not, you don't have that one out anywhere. You're just playing it out.
Yeah. And I'm not really at right now, not too sure what I want to do with it yet.
You looking for a label? You want to record that thing? Maybe?
Let's record it.
I mean,
it.
Maybe. We'll
Ybor City Records, man. Come see us. We'll take care of it.
Let's record that one. It can be a single.
I think it would have to be a single.
Happy to go on the rest of your records.
Yeah. It just doesn't fit in like stylistically with anything else I've been doing lately either. So yeah, so I wrote it and I was like, man, that sucks. Because now I can't use this. I don't know what to do with it. So I thought about like, I don't know, trying to do some sort of like collaborative project, but like maybe a single is the way to go. That makes a lot of sense.
Well, we don't want to pressure you, but you're right.
Yeah.
Our opinion's correct. I think one of the things you're talking about, though, is an interesting thing to discuss real quick. It doesn't have to be quick, but you put out an EP, five tunes on it.
Mm-hmm.
They do feel like they belong together. Like, yeah, they all feel like they're cut from the same DNA. There's a lot of bands that the record sounds like all the songs came from the same time period, but mm-hmm. they're not genre specific. I'm a big fan of Dawes. I talk a lot about on the show. And their records are all over the place. There's that mm-hmm. Laurel Canyon feel they're generally tied to, and their records go through different phases and stuff. But there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of different feels and genres in there. Mm-hmm. You know, it's Taylor, but I'm interested in, you know, they still do basically a record a year, you know, 10 songs, 10 to 12 songs. I think it's mostly 10 songs. They put it out, and I look forward to the sequencing. I look forward to all that stuff, mm-hmm. not just because I love that band, but I feel like there's a consumption intention there, you know, or the way they've intended for you to consume the songs. When you're thinking about your record, certainly it sounds like you're thinking about just, do these songs fit together? Would it be weird to have this Black Sheep song? But are you thinking in terms of an album, or are you just thinking of a collection of tunes? You want to get it out so people are hearing your stuff?
I wasn't until I had released something, I guess. I've always been like a big full album or full project person. I like to listen to things like front to back. So I put out that first EP. And like for a little while there, I had like a writer's block, just because you're trying to make something not only that'll fit all together, but that isn't so much of like a left turn from what you've done before. And you want it to fit like it, like stylistically. The people who've listened, you want them to keep listening. So you don't want to do something that's so out there. But after I kind of like stepped back and it had been out for a couple months, I think it's just really important to try not to limit yourself as far as what you write. Like, even if you're planning on using it or anything, just write it. And if it fits in, it fits in. If it doesn't, maybe, you know, in a couple of years it will. And I think it just helps with creativity in general. So like now when I write, I try to just, if I like it, I like it and I do it. I don't try to think about like if it's going to fit into something, and if it does, that's awesome. But,
let's go a little further into your process or, you know, or processes or, you know, how are you? Like, one of the questions we usually ask a guest is, are you lyrics first, music first, or title first?
I've never done title first.
It's surprising.
Listening to this show made me want to do title first.
Man after my own heart. That's right.
Right.
That wasn't even an option until we started this.
Right. Yeah. But typically music first. Once in a while I'll have just like, you know, a line pop into my head, and then I'll have to like sit down really quick and write it all out. And then
without the music, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I find like a lot of times I do that, I'll have a hard time fitting it into the music. I prefer to write to melody, I guess. But yeah, for the most part, music first.
And do you find the melodies setting a mood for you too? You kind of like, this sounds or feels like loss, or this sounds and feels like something specific. And is that shaping your lyrics?
Somewhat. Like, it depends how, I guess, obvious that mood is that it's giving out. Like, if it's something that's, like, super dark, like, obviously I'm going to try to write about something that's, like, heavy. But
you're not just looking around the room, naming something, and then writing to it?
Right, yeah, no.
For example, ceiling fan?
Ceiling fan, you'd think it's just about an object, but there's more to it,
I guess. You do have a song called Ceiling Fan?
I do. But typically it's whatever has been on my mind recently. It feels like a way to kind of understand what I'm feeling somewhat, like, because I've never been great with my words as far as like expressing my feelings to other people. So like I'll try to kind of dive into that when I'm like alone just playing by myself, and like, why is it that I feel this way? And then like, you know, three lines are born just from that. So I guess it's more just about what's currently going on inside, usually what I write about.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that interesting? We talk about that, and I know you're a listener, so you've heard a lot of guests talk about this, but this idea that like, we have trouble talking about how we feel maybe with our friends, so instead I'm going to go up in front of all these strangers and sing about it.
It's really weird, right? it is definitely a common thing. Nearly like all the musicians I know are that way. I'm not sure why, but weird people. You know.
That's true. We are a breed. That's mm-hmm. for sure.
We've had you do three songs. Is four too many?
I'd like to hear Ceiling Fan.
Maybe go out on Ceiling Fan.
For
Would
sure.
you play that one for us?
Well, if we're gonna rap there,
is that an alternate tuning?
Standard.
Oh man, we need another alt tuning.
I want to hear Ceiling Fan.
You can talk about it enough. Yeah. I think that I have.
Yeah,
to.
You have to. Yeah. Liam, I want to ask too, because you're at a spot where, like, you know, like we joked about, you know, you've been playing guitar half your life, but you've got 80% of your life hopefully left ahead of you. Are you, you mentioned you're going to school. Is that your fallback backup plan or?
Yeah,
or?
I'm going for audio engineering right now.
Oh, okay.
So originally I was
you're
like,
music all the way.
Yeah, definitely.
Where are you going to school?
SPC, just for at Mira, the recording arts program. Partially just to help make my own music better. Like I originally went into it cause I wanted to do some like self-produced stuff. But then the reason I went into a studio is because I knew the sounds I wanted to hear in my head. Like I heard how I wanted the songs to sound, but I just couldn't get it, the production down. So like I went to someone else.
Let's take like 2 minutes and just give a shout out to La La Mansion.
Yeah.
Where you, like, how did you come up with,
So Leon, who we mentioned earlier, had recorded his last record there. And then when he went into, he's recording a new album right now.
Is that in Tampa?
Yeah, in Tampa. So I went in and I ended up making like great friends with the producer there, Andrew Bullion. And then just later on, I kind of just asked him like, hey, would you be interested in working on some of my stuff? And we ended up just clicking so well musically. We have a lot of the same interests. So like a lot of the times I would be like, I have this idea to do this. And he's like, I was already thinking that. So it was just like a really natural flowing process, recording there. And I plan on doing a lot more with Andrew in the future.
Awesome.
Very cool. Yeah, that's awesome, man.
Yeah.
All right, you ready for Ceiling Fan?
Yeah, let's do it.
Liam, too, before you start that, I was curious also, we joked a little bit about social media earlier, but, you know, that's a big component to obviously being a musician these days. If you want people to get out and hear you, and as you're, you know, getting out there, do you have a particular strategy that you're approaching your social media to? I follow your stuff, you know, through the podcast. You're once in a while you're putting up little tunes, that, you know, little ditties or stuff you're working on.
Yeah,
obviously you're shooting and posting stuff from the road while you're on tour, and there's some cool stuff like that. Do you have a specific thing you're trying to cultivate?
Not really. I mean,
or have you found anything that's really working?
Keeping it light and like playful through social media, I think works really well for me. Just because the music is so heavy and like introspective that like doing something that just like joking around and like keeping it like, I don't know, a lot more casual through social media kind of, I think helps people see me as like an actual person. So I kind of just try to be as honest as possible through it. But no real strategy. I mean, I just post whatever, whenever.
Noted. Thank you for sharing that.
Spent the summer throwing rocks at the blue. Wet grass under my feet and stuck to my shoes. Long nights in your bedroom up until noon. Leaning on to somebody who felt just like you. And headlights going nowhere, driving east through the rain. Same view every night, swear it don't look the same. Getting blurry every night, man, it won't kill your pain. You're thing that it's done is push it farther away. All day I love. watch her grow into a better version of you. What am I supposed to say when you won't care anyway? Broken childhood dreamer, I can't complain. Hard nights on your roof, trying to alter our moods. Lost sight of myself, and I lost sight of you too. Dreamt I found you lying face down, you were dead on your floor. Under a ceiling fan, you drowned in your grow into a bitter version of you. What am I supposed to do when you won't care anyway? Broken brotherhood, I can't complain. All day I
Thanks so much, Liam.
Liam, thanks awesome. For doing this, man.
Yeah. Oh, thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks for sharing with us.
What's coming up for you, man? What are your plans for the year? It's just starting out, man. What's on the musical agenda?
Well, not too much. I've been working on a lot of demos and stuff, so I definitely want to get a project out. I'm gonna be doing like a live series kind of companion album thing that I'm gonna put out. It's still kind of in the works. But just planning on like touring a couple more times. Just playing as many shows locally, but nothing too big on the horizon right now. Just leaving it open.
Well, once you figure it out, come see us, man. We'll talk about the next record and about all the fun things you're doing.
That's good.
Yeah.
Thanks, man. We'll see you soon.
Thanks. Thank you.
soft again. Passing through that open door, but these lights are dim and flicker. Could be nothing, I don't know no more.
You've been listening to Songwriters.
Thank you for supporting us and our sponsors and all the great independent music makers out there trying to make their way in the music business these days. Songs we heard in this episode were Hardly, Circles, and Glimpse Of from Liam's Passing Through EP. We also heard a trio of unreleased songs, Hotel Hallway, Ceiling Fan, and Record Time.
Liam has a lot more to say, and we can't wait to hear what he does next. Stay up to date and catch him soon by following him on social media. He's at Liam_Bowman on Instagram. That's LIAM_BAUMAN. And visit him on Facebook or at liambowman.bandcamp.com. Get Liam into your rotation on Spotify, iTunes, and everywhere you get your music. And while you're there, we'd be grateful for a 5-star rating and a friendly review. And we highly recommend seeing Liam live. And when you do, please tell him you can't wait for his next episode on Song Divers, a sentiment we absolutely share with you.
Sounds like bells are playing in my head. Sirens scream around me. Like a dog just begging to be fed.
You mean a good boy?
In case that stays in, Ed was talking to Indy.
No, he was talking to me. You're a good boy. Trying my best.
You're a good songwriter. Who's a good songwriter?
Song Divers is a production of Ybor City Records and recorded in the historic Kenwood district of St. Petersburg, Florida.